About 20 years ago, I went for 5 months to Romania, and I haven't left. I've been there ever since. And most people, when they meet me now, think, oh, you're a missionary in Romania. And I have to say, absolutely not. I wasn't even Christian when I went to Romania. God tracked me down there. He found me. And so I became a Christian there. So I've never actually preached a message in an English church in English. So if my English is bad, I'll get Dan up here to translate. And he can translate it for me. So I'm a little bit worried, but hopefully it'll be okay. And what is quite exciting is this morning's message that you will hear are Ukrainian family who are in our town at the moment have already heard today in Russian. As we are very blessed that we have a family. They came to our house in February for 3 days. It was a family of six, and they came to live with me and my wife and our two kids. My wife was like, I thought we were going to have a family with like small kids in, and these guys, they were twins who had 15, a boy who was 13, and a boy who was 11, and mom and dad. And basically, they were believers, and very early on, they basically said, how can we serve? Just to kind of imagine a small rucksack, maybe this kind of size. This is what they all had with them when they left home. And inside each of their rucksacks, they all had a set of clothes for church, and they all had their Bibles. And one of the girls even had her flute with her, and she said, that's the way I serve God, as I serve. And I was like, well, where are your clothes? They said, it doesn't matter. And so they translate our talks every week. And so basically what happens is we have our Ukrainian family there, and they sit at the back and they plug in their headphones and they hear the talk, in Russian. And so it's a real honor to be able to, for the first time, me to be able to preach. I preached in Russian this morning already, and now I'm going to preach in English as well. So the first question I have for you is, who are your heroes? I'm sure if you kind of sit back and think, if the children were here, they'd kind of think about superheroes and they would think about, Hollywood films and, Batman. So what I would like you to do is just, the people who are around you, just turn around and say, who is your favorite hero? It can be, a person from a film. It can be somebody that you know in real life. I'd just like you guys to just, just amongst each other, just say, who is your hero in your life? And on the screen, you'll see a few options, so you can see a few options there. Okay, fantastic. So hopefully you've now got a bit of an idea, who the kind of people you're sitting next to, and if you see people shuffling away, it means that they're not fans of Batman or Spider-Man, and they're kind of, and they're going away from you. My hero wasn't any of these. My hero, when I was little growing up, was the guy on this screen. You won't recognize him at all, I'm sure, because he's my brother. He's not famous. And so growing up, I was 3 years younger than my brother, and I basically hero worshipped him. I thought he was amazing. Literally, everything that he did, I wanted to do. The way he was so calm, I wanted to be just like him. The way he played tennis or football, I wanted to be exactly like my brother. And basically, we would spend the whole time together. And we hardly ever argued. Like, it was one of those relationships we never, never argued. I don't think my brother's actually argued with anyone in his life. I think he's so kind of calm that you can't argue with him, basically. And so when I was growing up, I just wanted to be just like him. As I grew up and became older and left my kind of, 7-year-old self behind, I realized that my brother wasn't quite the perfect person that I maybe thought he was. And I began to see kind of flaws in the way he was and the way he kind of did things. And now he lives in Canada, his family are there, and we live in Romania. So our way of doing things is very different. He's been influenced by the culture there, and I've been influenced by the culture in Romania. And although we still get on incredibly well, I just see little kind of differences. He's no longer that kind of, 10 out of 10, the kind of guy who I think, wow, this guy's just amazing. I want to be just like him. Like he's just a little bit different. And so today, I want to have a look at a hero in the Bible. And the great thing is about heroes in the Bible is the heroes in the Bible aren't like, Disney Hollywood heroes. And if you look at the next screen, you have a look at a picture of the kind of hero that I think I can follow. So if I was like these guys on my left, like I don't have the six pack, I don't have the big muscles, you know, I can't kind of fly, I can't run at the speed of light. But this guy on the right, I can kind of get on board. I could be that kind of hero. You know, I could grow the belly. I think that'd be quite easy. You know, I can kind of, I don't think that would be a problem. Unshaven, that's the kind of hero that I think I could be like. So today we're going to have a look at one of these heroes. We're going to have a look at somebody who's not perfect. Somebody who's a little rough around the edges. And when I look at him and I read about him, I think, this is the kind of person that I could be like. And although we all want to say we're perfect, we'd all quite like to turn around and say, you know what, I'm pretty much perfect. I don't have any flaws at all. When we really look at ourselves and we look at who we are, we realize that we're not quite the perfect version of the people that we think we are. And so this is a hero that I think we can all get behind. So today's hero we're going to have a look is Barak. And we find him in Judges 4. So if you have your Bibles with you or a Bible on your phone, please feel free to kind of flick it open and we'll have a look there. So Barak in Judges 4. And just to give a little bit of history, as we're kind of, I know you guys are studying another book, so just kind of diving in here. Judges basically comes at a time, so the people of God were in Israel under slavery. Through Moses, they escape, they go into the desert. Through their own fault, they wander around pretty much in a big circle for 40 years and then end up in the promised land. And they were given one instruction. When you get in there, clear out of the other people. Do not let anyone, and people being people, they kind of 90% they did really good, but they just left a little bit. They're kind of like, oh, these people will leave here, and we get on well with these people, and that's okay. And a little bit like us. We kind of know how we should be living. We know where we should be going, but there's always like 10% where we just think, do I really have to do that? Could I not do it my way? I know Jesus' way is great, but I think I could probably change it a little bit, and it'd be even better. And this is basically what happened to them. So they ended up in a cycle of what happened to them. So at the beginning, it was prosperous. It was amazing. Everything was going great. And then they fall down into the cycle of sin. And from the sin comes the punishment, and then in punishment, repentance, and then back into prosperity. And this might happen once, and you think, okay, next time they're going to learn. Next time they're going to realize that once they get, why don't you kind of stay on the mountaintop? Well, you're doing well. Just stay up there. And again, they go down into sin, and then they reject God. But it's just like us. We so often try through our own kind of powers and our own strength to kind of do what is right in the eyes of God. I remember as a child growing up that I kind of thought, if I do this, if I act in a certain way and I be in a certain way, I can do it. I can be the kind of person that God would like me to be. I can be the kind of person that I should be. And then I would fall into sin, and then I would kind of, hate myself, and, I would get into situations that I didn't want to be in, and so I'd have to turn back to God. And this cycle continues and continues until we break it with Jesus. Jesus is the only one who can break that cycle of the way we try and live. And so today we're going to have a look at Barak and see what he did, and what he did and what happened in him. And I can tell you now, a bit of a spoiler alert, he's no Hollywood hero. I'm very sorry, don't expect, a perfect ending. Don't expect a perfect story. That's not going to happen. So I'd just like to look at the first three verses. So I'm just going to read chapter 4 and the first three verses, just to kind of give us a bit of background. After Ehud died, the Israelites once again did evil in the eyes of the Lord. So the Lord sold them into the hands of Jabin, the king of Canaan, who reigned in Hazor. The commander of his army was Sisera, who lived in Heroseth Hagoyim. Because he had 900 iron chariots and had cruelly oppressed the Israelites for 20 years, they cried to the Lord for help. So this isn't just a little bit of oppression. This isn't just a couple of days when they weren't feeling so great or kind of felt as if this was 20 years of oppression. And I can kind of understand. I've lived in Romania for 20 years. Please don't let me kind of, don't think this is 20 years of oppression. I've lived in Romania. I've absolutely loved it. But it's a long period of time. It's not a short period of time. And they lived, and then they cried to God for help, and they said, God, we need your help. And so you imagine that our Hollywood hero would then, you know, probably what would happen in the Hollywood film of Barak's life is we would see him, you know, probably taken out from obscurity, and then, you know, a training montage scene where, you know, set to great music, and we'd see him become this great hero. He'd then go off, fight Sisera, it would all end, he'd probably get the girl at the end, and everything would be happy, and we'd all go home having seen this amazing film. This doesn't happen. Barak isn't even the hero in his own story. And so often we want to be the center of attention. And so often God says to us, it's not about you. It's not about who's getting the attention. And so often we think, but can't people just look at us and say, oh, wow, look at what you've done, and look what you've done. And Barak, he's a great example of somebody who just gets no attention whatsoever. First of all, he's not even the judge of Israel. Deborah was the judge of Israel back then. And we see in chapter 4, that it's Deborah who sends for Barak. It's not Barak who comes forward, the hero, and says, you know what, Deborah, I can do it. Call on me. Don't worry, I'll be there. Deborah sends for Barak and says, come here, okay? And she says to him, the Lord, the God of Israel, commands you. Go take your 10,000 men and lead away, and I will make sure that you win. And he will give them into your hands. And so you think, wow, this guy has been given this, you know, God-given command. Surely he's going to go off and do it. And Barak, in verse 8, doesn't really give a hero's answer. He's looking at a woman who's, you know, who's ruling Israel in a time where women were very much seen as second-class citizens. And he says, you know, him, a leader of 10,000 men. And the word 10,000 there, it wasn't a specific number. It was a lot of men. Like in our days, we'd probably say like 1 million people. He was in charge of these people. And so you've got this commander, and he's standing there, and he stands in front of this woman, and he says in verse 8, if you go with me, I will go. But if you don't go with me, I won't go. He's basically saying, I don't think I can do it on my own. I don't think I can really cope. And we look at it and we think, oh, Barak, what have you done? And then I look at it and I think, I'm a lot like Barak. I'm a lot like Barak. When I get asked to do things I don't think I can really do, I'm always looking for a way out. I always think, couldn't someone else do it? I would be very happy if Dan, even this morning, said, you know what, Ben, it's fine, you don't have to talk, I'll talk. I'd be like, oh, answer the prayer. Because we always feel a little bit worried. We feel a little bit anxious about stepping out in our faith. And so often we think to ourselves, you know what? This chair's quite comfortable. I feel quite good here. I might as well just stay here. Because taking that step in faith is just a little bit too hard. Taking that step in faith means it's going to be uncomfortable for me. And Barak gives us exactly that same answer. He says, you know what? I'll go if you do. You know, if you say yes and we go together, there's kind of strength in numbers there, and we'll go. And if you look forward to the New Testament, like Jesus also mentions many times, and in the New Testament it's mentioned many times, about anxiety, about feeling stressed. And God knew this was something that we as people were going to really struggle with. We knew that it was going to be something, that it wasn't going to be something that we were going to be able to just say, oh, I've become a Jesus follower, fantastic. I'm no longer stressed about anything. I don't even get anxious. I'm not worried. Like, it's fine. I know Dan said like, that we need to be happy all the time. We need to feel that love. But still, some part of us and that voice in our head says, are you really good enough? Can you really do it? And that's certainly the story of Barak as well. And I kind of think of it as my two children. So I've got Ioana, who's at 11. We were incredibly blessed. We basically, me and my wife got married 11 years ago. And Ioana was left by her mum at the charity that I work for. So I work for a charity, which is not a Christian organization. And we have a home for young people with HIV/AIDS. And her mum was HIV positive, living on the streets. And the hospital in Constanza, our local town, basically said to us, look, can you take her in? And so Mihaela came, gave birth to Ioana, said, I'm going to stay, I'm going to look after Ioana, I'm going to be a great mum. It was her second child. We said, fantastic. After a month, Mihaela said, I can't do it. I can't be a mum. I just can't do it. But I'm going to leave her here with you. I'm going to leave Ioana at the charity. You guys can look after her. And so about a month and a half later, I was actually on the way to Esther and Adina's house to run a Bible study. And me and Louisa popped in to the hospital just to check that Ioana was okay. She had some stomach issues and she was just in hospital for about 3 days. And we left the hospital and God had put on our hearts that like we should take Ioana. But we were only just married. We'd only been married like 4 months. And so we were kind of, you know, still in the kind of stage of, do you say something? Do you not say something? You don't really want to rock the boat. We discussed children, but there was no kind of plan set out when we'll be having children. We kind of thought, we'll be married for a while, and after that, we'll have children. And about a week later, and I can't remember which one of us said it, one of us said Ioana, and the other one just said yes. And that was our discussion about whether we should foster and adopt Ioana. It wasn't a long discussion, and we were just incredibly blessed to have Ioana in our family. So she was about 6 months when she came to us and about three when she was adopted. And we literally signed the adoption papers about a week before Mikey, her brother, was born. And you look at them and you think they're brother and sister. They're both incredibly blonde, you know, and you think, you know, A, they're not a Romanian, and you think, you know, where have you come from? And they're just, you know, amazing. And they get on really well. They fight like cats and dogs and they love each other the whole time. But it's just like them. Like, if I ask Mikey to do something, we're out in public, and I say, Mikey, or can you go and ask this person something? Or look, we've got some, can you go and buy some water? Mikey, literally, his first thought is turn around, Ioana. Do you want to come? Come on, Ioana, come on. And Ioana's like, oh, Mikey. And this is Barak. He's there, standing there, saying, you know what? I can do it. I know God has said I can do it, but if you don't come with me, I'm not going to go. And I think this is the kind of hero that I can really get behind. I'm just like that. I prefer to do something together. I prefer to be with other people when I do things. Even if I know I've been called to do something, isn't it much easier if someone else comes along with you? Someone else is there along your side. And so we hear then in verse 9, what's going to happen? Deborah then says, very well, I'll go with you. But because of the way you are going about this, the honor will not be yours. For the Lord will hand Sisera over to a woman. So Deborah went with Barak to Kadesh. And so we see that the glory is not going to be his. He's not going to become this Hollywood hero. He's not going to have, you know, people kind of lining up at his, you know, film premiere to see the film of Barak and what he did and how great accomplishments, you know, he kind of conquered. And the woman gets all the glory. This one woman gets all the glory. And when we look at this story, we think, oh, I feel so sorry for Barak. He literally defeats a whole army. There's one guy left, and this woman gets all the glory because she defeated one guy. But it's the same with us. Some of us can think, oh, wow. You know, I've been saved by Jesus. Look at me. Aren't I amazing? But we can't take any of the glory because none of it is ours. Without Jesus, and remembering today what Jesus did by dying for us on the cross, we can turn around and say, we don't deserve any of it. There's nothing that we can do that can help our salvation. There's no actions I can say, oh yes, but I became saved because I was really good and because I went to Romania and I worked for a charity, that's why Jesus saved me. No, he didn't. Jesus saved me because he loved me. He loved me when I was way off, and all the glory is his. So when I look at this story of Barak, and I think to myself, you know what? This is my story. I might be doing these things. I might be living this life, but God should be getting all the glory. So when people come to me and say, oh, wow, you work in Romania. It's like, no, like I was incredibly lucky to be chosen. And God said to me, you know what? Go off, go to Romania. I've got it all prepared. And I was like, okay, I've got different plans. And he was like, no, definitely Romania. And I don't know what he's got in store next, but I know that he is going to get all the glory. And so then what happens is Barak goes off. This amazing fighter goes off and he goes down and he says, you know what's going to happen? And then in verse 14, we see again that Deborah is the one pushing him from behind. Even then, he's still unsure of what's going to happen. He's unsure of how he's going to do it. And so Deborah tells them what's going to happen in verse 14. And Deborah said to Barak, "Go, this is the day the Lord has given Sisera into your hands. Has not the Lord gone ahead of you?" So Barak went down, followed by 10,000 men. And that was where he did. He conquered the army. This army which had been terrorizing Israel for 20 years with their iron chariots. And Barak went down with his 10,000 men. He defeated them. And obviously, in our Hollywood film, we would then see the hero returning triumphant. You know, probably kind of, you know, some good stage makeup, you know, kind of, you know, clothes a little bit of torn as he kind of, you know, triumphantly comes back and everyone says, "Wow, Barak, isn't this amazing?" And this doesn't happen. Because he isn't the person who killed Sisera. As we see later on, that it's a woman called Jael, and she goes out to meet Sisera, and in verse 18 she says, "Come, my lord, come in right here, do not be afraid." She's already got this planned, she knows what she's going to do. She then very cunningly wraps him up in a rug to hide him, and like a lot of the Old Testament, it becomes very gory very quickly, and she basically stabs him to the temple with a tent peg. And she gets all glory. And you know what? A lot of it, I think to myself, if I was Barak, I'd be a little bit annoyed, a little bit cheesed off. It's like, hold on a second. I've gone down and I've defeated a whole army. And this lady gets one person, and I'm not going to get any of the glory. And if we look at the end of the chapter, and then we look at chapter 5, what does Barak do in the whole of chapter 5? It says at the beginning, in verse 1, "On that day, Deborah and Barak, son of Abim, sang this song. And they sang a song to God. And they gave God all the glory." Barak doesn't think to himself, "Oh, you know what? I should be getting, you know what? You know, this lady just killed one person and I killed the rest." He's not talking about what he did. He's not talking about what he did. He is giving all the glory because God made this happen. And so often in our lives, we can get caught up in what we're doing and our achievements. And the world around us tells us this is important. And even as parents, like, it's a struggle, isn't it? How often has your kid come back from school or your grandchild and you've said to them, "Well, what did you get?" "You know, Mom, I completely failed the test." And you're like, "Fantastic. Isn't that amazing? Give the glory to God." And you, because you're like, "What? What do you mean you failed the test?" "Oh, yeah, well, you know, studying, learning, revising, it didn't really happen." I had one similar situation at school, and I remember even now, I think I was about 9, and it was like the first time I'd done school exams. And I knew on Monday the exams were starting. And so I don't know why, on Friday night when I left school, I took one book home to revise. I took my French book home. And I don't know why I chose French. I wasn't very good at it. And I took my French book home and spent, I would love to say, all weekend revising. I think I probably spent about 20 minutes in total. But anyway, like, I could have, you know, I put in an effort to revise my French exam. Get to school on Monday and, like, look at the list of exams. And, you know, Monday we didn't have a French exam. Tuesday, no French exam. Wednesday, no French exam. And then, you know, said to the French teacher, like, "You know, I've studied all weekend." He was like, "Yeah, the French exam we did on Friday when you were in the class." I was like, "Oh, okay." "Okay, thanks." You know, and we think to ourselves, you know, we kind of think, "Oh, if we do this, then this outcome will happen. If we are like this, then we're going to achieve this." And we think that our actions, you know, will mean that we will get certain outcomes. And we look at the outcomes and we decide whether that is success or failure. And one of the things that I do in Romania now is I coach a football team. A friend of mine who's a pastor in another church, we have an 11-a-side team, and we started off in League 6 in Romania, which is basically the bottom of the bottom in League 6. Okay, so you turn up, we've turned up in football pitches, and we've had to, you know, take cows off football pitches because we need to play football there. Like, you know, don't imagine, you know, stadiums filled with kind of thousands of people cheering our name. And we were bottom of League 6 all season. And our final game of the season, we won, and we ended up second bottom. So we were pretty proud of this. We were, you know, it was a proud achievement. And anyway, we go to the local sports organization and they say, you know what? We'd like you to go into League 4. We were like, what? And they go, yeah, there's a place opened up and we know what you're doing and we know that you're doing it to help people. So we'd like to give this opportunity to play in League 4. So we said, okay. And a local town said, you can play on our pitch. So basically, through no, absolutely nothing that we can have did, we ended up with a group of young people in League 4, which is semi-pro. We could play in the Romanian version of the FA Cup. We could have been playing against people like in the Premier League. We didn't, but it could have happened. And we were playing in kit that Sunderland Club had donated to us. So our guys looked amazing. They were in Sunderland kit, and their tracksuits were English tracksuits that they'd worn at the, I think it was the 2002 European. And so these guys were wearing full-on England, you know, Nike tracksuits, Sunderland football kit, playing at this stadium, which we found out was the biggest stadium in our area. It could seat 30,000 people. And we were turning up there, literally, you know, as if we just, you know, off the streets. You know, and I would love to then tell you in this Hollywood story that we then won the league and we ended up in the league. Absolutely not. The first season, we weren't relegated because of COVID. And the second season, we were very handsomely relegated way before the end of the season. We were just a point. So we are now in League 5. We haven't quite got down to League 6 yet. But you know what? The guys we have and the guys that we work with, we are so blessed to work with them because they are an example for the other teams. The other day, we turned up and we were playing a team in a village who won the league last year, and they chose not to go up into League 4. And at the end of the match, our guys had lost. It was such a close game, a 2-1, and they very, very, you know, it was a great game. At the end of the match, the people watching from the village didn't go up to their team to congratulate them. They came up to our boys and said, "That was amazing. That you played amazing football, you kept the ball on the ground, and I didn't hear you argue the whole way. I didn't hear anyone swear, I didn't hear anyone get angry, even though you were losing, you managed to keep it together." And they just said, for us, that was an amazing example for our team. And you know, and you walk away from that kind of a situation, and you think, God is giving you those results. It's nothing that we're doing that is giving us that opportunity. God has opened doors and he said, this is something that we want you to do, and we're just walking through them. And whether, you know, whether tomorrow he closes those doors and says, you know what, it's enough football, go off and do something else, it's not a problem. And I think Barak is a great example of this. He's not worried that he's not getting the glory. He's not worried that he didn't defeat the leader of the army. But he was worried at the beginning. But at the end, he wasn't worried what people thought or what was going to happen to him. He was worried about giving the glory to God. So I think today, it's very easy to think we should be perfect. We should be doing everything to this standard that is a perfection. And I can definitely tell you, I'm never going to get it. If you get there, fantastic. Send me an email, tell me how it's done. I know I'm not going to get there. And actually, in our imperfection, in our anxiety, in our weakness, that is when God can use us. We just have to be open to him. We've got to be open to giving him the glory. We've got to be open to stepping out into faith. And it's okay if we're worried about that. It's okay if we're unsure. And it's okay to turn around to someone like Barak said to Deborah, that I'll go, but please come with me. Because often, when there's two of us, we feel a little bit stronger. When there's two of us doing it together, we feel like it's a little bit easier. When there's one person, it's like, really? Do I have to? Can I? And so when we're making these decisions and we're thinking, is God really calling me to do it? If you're worried and anxious about it, he probably is. If it seems like it's a task that's too big for you, he probably is calling you to do it. And he gave those people, he gave that army into Barak's hands, even though he was worried. Because Barak did what God had commanded him to do. So do not worry about being perfect. Do not worry about getting it right all the time. And this morning, what a fantastic example. I mean, we've had flowers flying, batteries dying, which is great. I thought it was just our church in Chernobyl, which it was. I feel so happy to have seen that. And you know what? I think in that kind of, you know, muddle and the thing, you know, the things that go wrong, that's when God really shows that he's in control. Because we try and make it perfect. I'm sure that, you know, the program today wasn't, you know, the 46th minute, can somebody knock the flowers over? Like, it wasn't in the program. But actually, God uses all of that, and he uses all of us in our weakness, and so he can get the glory. Amen.